Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Jefferson High School Auditorium for our forum for candidates for the 13th Senate District recall election, Republican Senator Scott Fitzgerald and Democratic challenger Lori Compass. This evening's forum is sponsored by the Jefferson and Fort Atkinson Chambers of Commerce, the Daily Jefferson County Union, and WFAW. I will be your moderator this evening. My name is Michael Klisch. We will begin with opening statements from our candidates. Senator Fitzgerald.
Thank you very much, Mike, and thank you to the Daily Jefferson County Union, the Chambers of Commerce, both Jefferson and Fort Atkinson, the Jefferson School District for hosting the event this evening and all attending, and those that are listening in at home. Let me just begin by saying I am certainly looking forward to the discussion tonight about the issues that are facing not only the state of Wisconsin, but I think the 13th state Senate seat. And certainly looking forward to the next 2 weeks so that we can once again make our cases clear and concise to the people of this district that we think that we're on the right track. And I personally would like to once again congratulate Lori Compass for her candidacy and look forward to a discussion on down the road about what are her specific positions and whether or not they're in line with what I think the people of the 13th District want to hear and certainly hold near and dear to their hearts. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator. Ms. Compass?
I'd like to add my thanks. Just a minute. Is that good? I'd like to add my thanks to Michael Klisch for moderating and to WFAW, the Daily Union, and the Chambers of Commerce in Jefferson and Fort Atkinson for hosting tonight's event. Thanks to my family for their love and support and to everyone who's chosen to attend or tune in. It's great to see that democracy is alive and well in the 13th Senate District. And I want to thank Senator Fitzgerald for accepting my invitation to debate. It took us over 20,000 signatures and a Senate challenge to get a chance to sit down and discuss these issues, but at last we're finally here. For those of you who don't know me, I live in Fort Atkinson with my husband, Eric, and our two kids, Tom and Anna, and I run my own small business. Running for such a prominent office might seem like an unusual step for a political newcomer, but actually it isn't unheard of. In fact, the senator never held public office before running for this same seat almost 20 years ago. His success has proven that it's possible for a novice to learn on the job and to serve honorably for many years. It's been quite a transition from concerned citizen to state Senate candidate. I began my campaign with a series of 8 evening listening sessions around the district. I used the comments and insights I heard from the session's participants to create my campaign platform. In the time since, I've been going door to door alongside the volunteers, visiting with business owners, and meeting with community leaders. If I haven't met you in person yet, be assured that I hope to meet you soon. This past weekend, the volunteers and I held an old-fashioned whistle-stop tour of 8 cities around the district, and we welcomed everyone from all walks of life and across the political spectrum. We talked about the values we all have in common, regardless of our political party, values like honesty, compassion, and fairness, and how our shared commitment to those values can help us move past the divisiveness of the past year. It's been a long journey since all this started back in November. But people have told me time and again that it's a journey we had to make in order to protect our democracy and ensure that Wisconsin remains a great state in which to live and work. Over the course of this campaign and the petition drive, I've talked to hundreds, maybe even thousands of people around our district, and they've told me they want a senator who is honest and accessible. They want jobs, education, and affordable health care. They want to return to Wisconsin's best traditions of cooperation and civility in the legislature. And they want a voice in the Senate, someone who will listen to their concerns and carry those concerns to the Capitol. And now they've told me they want me to be that leader, and they want me to serve as their voice. I'm humbled by their faith in me, and their courage inspires my own. I look forward to tonight's discussion of the issues facing our district, and I thank you for the opportunity to serve.
Thank you, Ms. Compass. First question, we'll get right to it. Senator Fitzgerald, limiting collective bargaining rights for state workers, was it good for the state, and would you do it again?
Well, I guess to put it in perspective, I think that is the second set of reforms that was part of Act 10. First and foremost, it was something that had been discussed, I think, in and around Wisconsin for some time, and that was that public employees had been insulated from the downturn in the economy. The second set of reforms and the long-term reforms, which were introduced by Governor Walker, was to change collective bargaining. And that goes back to 1971 when that final piece of collective bargaining was put in place. And since then, I think the tables have been tipped towards the public employee unions. This is a clawback on that. That's what those reforms are about. I think they are working right now. And certainly, not only myself, but the Republican legislators felt that it was time to do that. So, yeah, I believe I would do it again, and I believe that the Republican legislature would do it again.
Thank you, Senator. Ms. Compass, limiting collective bargaining for state workers.
Well, I'm reminded of the video that I think a lot of us have seen recently of the billionaire campaign donor begging Governor Walker to make Wisconsin a right-to-work state, hearing these statements. I think that collective bargaining is democracy in the workplace. It gives everyone a level playing field. And I've heard from a lot of people as I've traveled around the district that they feel demoralized now that their right to bargain collectively has been taken away. I've heard from prison guards who say that attacks are up and they don't have the right to go and negotiate their workplace safety rules anymore. It's not just about salary and benefits. I think that we can discuss cuts and concessions, but I think that everyone deserves a chance to come to the table.
Thank you, Ms. Compass. Next question. Actions by the legislature last year for you, Ms. Compass. Senate Democrats literally hid out to avoid voting on a bill they were opposed to. Had you been in the Senate, would you have followed them to Illinois?
Well, if I'd been in the Senate, we wouldn't have needed to go to Illinois.
Please hold your response until the end, please. We'd like to get as many questions in as possible the next hour. Senator Fitzgerald.
I guess I would ask Lori to answer the question. And at the time, we had 19 seats.
All right. I'm not going to ask it again. Refrain, please. I'm sorry, Senator. Go ahead.
I would just ask Lori to answer the question. At the time, we had 19 seats in the state Senate.
Ms. Compass, your response to that.
I think that it's important to give people time to understand what's in a bill, especially a bill with the sweeping changes that this one had. I think, One thing that came to light after the senators fled the state was the fact that that bill contained a provision to sell state-owned power plants on no-bid contracts. So I think that that never would have come to light if it would have passed as rapidly as Governor Walker had said he wanted it to pass. So their fleeing the state gave people time to understand fully what was in that bill. There were a lot of things that upset people that they hadn't known about at first. And so I think since our state does not have a filibuster and there's really no way to allow debate, I think I would have gone, yes. I think it was the right thing to do.
Thank you, Ms. Compass. Senator Fitzgerald, Wisconsin has senior care, a bipartisan program that, by most accounts, is superior to and cheaper than Medicare and Badger Care for those who have no health care options. What is your plan for the future of these programs?
Well, the first thing you have to realize is that the Wisconsin legislature goes hat in hand out to D.C. and asks for federal waivers. But in the instance of senior care, there has been an absolute bipartisan commitment to continue to make sure that there's enough MA dollars available for that program. That commitment continues, and I think it will be there into the future. Family care, same type of program, and ultimately Badger Care, which originally was a program for indigent children, then expanded to their parents, and then ultimately expanded based on a means test. All of these are part of the mix that is Wisconsin's MA system. We don't have full control over it as Wisconsin legislature, but is there a commitment to it? Absolutely. $1.2 billion was added in this last budget to the Medicaid.
Thank you, Senator Fitzgerald. Ms. Compass, senior care and Badger care, your plans.
Well, Senator Fitzgerald says there's a bipartisan commitment to senior care, but I recall Andy Jorgensen having to do a large petition drive to save senior care. So I question that. I also recall that the federal government actually told the current administration that it could not make the cuts that it wanted to make, or it would risk losing its federal funding. So actually, the current administration was forced by the federal government to fully fund these programs, or not to fund these programs to the levels they have. I think I found during the petition drive, a lot of us who carried the petition found during the petition drive that people were really devastated by the cuts to Badger Care that took effect in December. And that actually is why a big part of my platform is figuring out how we can restore those cuts to Badger Care. I mean, when you see people who are just at their wits' end about how they're going to pay these increased premiums, or these people who've lost coverage entirely, or people who missed one payment and now are kicked off for a year, that is heartbreaking. We have the money. We've just given tax breaks to the wrong people. We need to restore Badger Care for our working families and our farmers.
Thank you, Ms. Compass. Next question, a little different for each candidate, but the same issue. Ms. Compass, are you willing to loosen regulations for any business, including mining, in order to bring jobs to distressed areas?
We have a good mining bill on the books, and I think if mining companies want to abide by the law, they are more than welcome to come to Wisconsin. I think it's a mistake to allow mining companies to write their own mining law. I think it's a mistake to allow companies to come in and bend the rules. I think it abuses companies that are following the rules to allow some people to run around the rules. So no, I would not support bending the rules for certain mining companies.
Thank you, Ms. Compass. Senator Fitzgerald, you formed a committee to come up with a bill more reasoned than the Assembly version, but then tabled the bill for a vote on the Assembly bill, and that was defeated by a vote from your own party. What happened?
Well, I think most people that are opposed to the mine, like Lori is, have looked at current law and have said that it's proper and that it invites corporations to actually do business in Wisconsin, when that's just not accurate. And although we had a good discussion, and you're right, Michael, we had a select committee on mining that was chaired by Senator Kedzie, we could not come up with a bill that would meet the compromise of a couple of our members. We then reached out to a number of the trades unions, including the operating engineers and the carpenters and the pipe fitters, who said there are some Milwaukee Democrats that believe in job creation and believe that it'll have an impact on southeastern Wisconsin as well as northern Wisconsin, companies like Bucyrus Caterpillar. And as a result of that, we went to the floor of the Senate thinking that Senator Tim Carpenter was going to vote with the Republicans, knowing that Senator Schultz was not. He did not vote for it. The corporation then pulled up stakes and said they were not going to continue to work with the Wisconsin legislature. I believe, based on Governor Walker's comments as of late, that if we can get beyond these recalls on June 5th, that we can go back to work and hopefully pass a mining bill before the November elections. That's our goal.
Thank you, Senator.
Can I respond?
Yes, you may.
I want to say that I'm not opposed to mining per se. I'm opposed to mining corporations writing mining bills in Wisconsin. And there is a video of the senator saying that the mining companies did write that bill, and I just think that's unacceptable. I believe in job creation too, but not at the expense of our natural resources.
We don't have the expertise within the legislature, like the corporation that actually was interested in doing mining here, to be able to write that bill without their assistance. And And I will continue. I think you need to continue to have a dialogue with the corporation on whether or not they think those statutes are too onerous, and specifically the contested case, which is a big part of our process here in Wisconsin.
Can I respond?
No, that's it. And I will remind the audience, please respect the candidates and be quiet. Senator Fitzgerald, many questions were asked by the people who submitted them about what they fear the Wisconsin Deer Czar James Kroll's plan might be to privatize public lands, reducing or eliminating free access to public lands by Wisconsin hunters, and converting to private game farms as he did in Texas. There were also many questions about privatization in general, several about the correctional system. What is your view on this?
I would dismiss it as not valid at all. Dr. Kroll, actually, as I talked to sportsmen, deer hunters, throughout not only the district but really throughout the state, there is a respect for his expertise. And when he was invited by the governor to review the Wisconsin deer herd, which has caused a lot of consternation, if you talk to anybody that hunts in the nine-day season north of Highway 29, they're just dumbfounded by the lack of deer that are available up there to be harvested. And they're looking for some real answers, and they believe that Dr. Kroll is an expert that hopefully can wrap his arms around this. I think it's, you know, the idea that somehow you're going to privatize deer hunting in Wisconsin is ridiculous.
Thank you, Senator. Ms. Compass?
Well, James Kroll did say that hunting on public land was the last bastion of communism, so that would lead me to believe that he would like to privatize deer hunting. He didn't bother to show up for deer season this year. I'm not sure why we're paying him. I think it's $125,000 a year if he can't even bother to show up. I think that he has a pretty obvious agenda, and it really does concern me. I know deer management is a problematic issue. It seems like no matter what is done, it's never pleasing to everyone, but I think privatizing, you know, just making hunters hunt on game farms like they do in Europe would be a huge mistake. Hunting is a big part of people's lives here. It's family tradition, and I would like to definitely like to keep our public lands open for hunting.
Thank you, Ms. Compass. Ms. Compass, a business has been accused of dumping three times the allowable amount of human waste on land in Jefferson County and falsifying documents to hide the fact, putting residents' water wells at risk and their property values. A political appointee in the DNR chose not to refer this case to the Justice Department, though he was advised to do so by the DNR staff. Should there be clearer guidelines on how to proceed with this type of infraction?
Well, the guidelines are perfectly clear. I think that we just need to stop putting politics above law enforcement. Laws should be enforced consistently. Inconsistent enforcement punishes obviously the people who are affected, and it also punishes other businesses who are following the rules. I think that the DNR secretary should be appointed by the Natural Resources Board. I think this is just an example of politics getting in the way of enforcement.
Thank you, Ms. Compass. Senator?
I absolutely agree that this corporation should be punished, and we have had a number of cases, not only in Jefferson County, but throughout the state, where we have had well contamination. And I know there's a grave concern that this has happened as a result of this incident. And not only should the corporation pay to have those wells tested, but I think, once again, they should do a full review on why this company is permitted. And if they are in violation of the spreading regulations, and not only the regulations, but the parameters of the way they've been permitted, that permit should be revoked.
Thank you, Senator Fitzgerald. Senator, Todd Berry of the Wisconsin Taxpayers Alliance said in a newsletter in April that after years of piecemeal change, often driven by narrow lobbyist agendas, Our state income tax is a hodgepodge of unintended consequences, conflicting incentives, and unnecessary complexity, and is ready for Ripley's, believe it or not. Your opinion of the state tax code, sir?
To some extent, I agree with Todd. And he's a very smart man and has studied the Wisconsin tax code for many, many years. I believe that certainly any revision of the tax code would have to be a complete overhaul, top to bottom. There's been talk about it in the Wisconsin legislature over the year, but I don't know that anyone has had the ability to kind of put the momentum together to get that done. If you look at what's going on at the federal level, it's the same discussion. It is absolutely a very complex, it is a set of statutes that have been developed over hundreds of years, and if we can find a way of doing that at the federal level or the state level, absolutely the income tax should be revisited and revamped.
Thank you, Senator. Ms. Gumpus, the state tax code.
I have talked to hundreds, maybe thousands of people around the district, and this is not an issue that's come up with anyone so far. So, you know, as someone who decided several years ago that filling out my tax forms was way too complicated and I would hire an accountant, I have to say that it certainly could be looked at, but it's not a priority of mine.
Thank you, Ms. Gumpus. Ms. Gumpus, with unemployment historically high, there are thousands of well-paid jobs that have gone unfilled in Wisconsin for many months because workers lack the necessary skills. Many of these jobs do not require a college degree. Should we invest more in schools such as Madison Vocational, which has long waiting lists for many of its programs? Also, I'm consolidating several questions from our listeners on this one. Also, the university system has not had an inflation adjustment in state funding for many years, and tuition has risen dramatically. What should the state do?
Yeah, I certainly think that we need to make education a priority. As far as technical colleges, their funding was cut 30% in the last budget, despite the fact that their enrollment had increased 40%. So there's an obvious desire on the part of students, both students who've just graduated high school and older students who are wanting to change careers, to continue their education and get better training. There's, as you say, an obvious need on the part of employers for skilled workers. So to me, it really makes no sense at all to cut technical training. I think that we should make sure that that's a priority. I also, you know, talking about universities, it's interesting to me. Our state universities, the tuition is increasing so much that we're on our way to really privatizing our state universities. And I think that we need to talk as a society about whether or not that's something that we really want to do. It's one of these things that's so incremental. Tuition just kind of jumps every year, but we haven't really sat down and decided, you know, is this something that we want? Do we want our public universities to be accessible to everyone, or is it going to be like private universities where they're only accessible to a few?
Thank you, Ms. Compass.
Sir, do I get the answer to that one more?
Yes.
Okay. I just wanted to mention that there were advanced manufacturing skill grants for tech colleges, which was about $400,000 that was added by the Joint Finance Committee at the end. I do believe that tech colleges are certainly the answer to filling this hole that does exist with some of these skilled positions. There needs to be more private-public partnerships like we have seen in some of these tech colleges in the past. And even though there was a reduction, the Joint Finance Committee went back and allowed them to levy to a higher limit. That was controversial. But in the end, some did, some didn't. And then we have also referendum for tech colleges, which obviously Madison Area Technical College had a massive referendum that did pass. And most of it was in and around projects related to construction. But I still believe there still is a huge commitment to education in the state. It still makes up 50% of the entire state budget. And that's been historical amongst both Republicans and Democrats is that commitment to education. I think that will continue into the future.
Thank you, Senator Fitzgerald. Senator, reportedly the domestic production tax credit in the 2011-2013 state budget will cost the state $360 million in revenue over the next 4 years and some $130 million each year after. How will we pay for this?
There is a number of tax credits, and I just want to go to a number that continues to be, I think, discussed and exploited as being a much higher figure than it has been. There's about $58 million that ultimately was in this budget that were specifically targeted towards, for the most part, the manufacturer's tax credit. And it's a good example, along with the one that you just mentioned, that I think ultimately will pay for itself. And the reason is that until the job is created, the credit is not available. And that's a pretty simple premise that's been used in states all over the nation where we're trying to be competitive. So whether it's something that's been created by the new Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation or whether it's something that's generated by a piece of legislation by an individual legislator, I think that these tax credits can be effective, they can be targeted, they can be limited, and ultimately they can be paid for. And the way you do that is by a good, strong budgeting process that begins in February of every other year when you look at what the state budget should look like based on the revenue streams. And for the most part, that's income tax, sales tax, and corporate tax collections.
Thank you, Senator Fitzgerald. Ms. Gumpus?
Well, I think that we need to make sure that our budget reflects our priorities as a society. And various tax credits, some work and some don't. Some hold a lot of promise or seem to, but then they don't deliver. And I think that we really need to think about how we can create communities that attract businesses and sustain businesses before we start giving money away that we don't really have. I think we need to invest more in education. I think we need to invest more in making our communities livable. And I'll leave it there.
Thank you, Ms. Gumpus.
Thanks.
Ms. Gumpus, recent policy changes have caused a loss of alternative energy jobs, including some in Jefferson County. How will you bring solar, wind, and biomass energy companies back to the state?
Well, I think we need to have laws that encourage their development. The recent law that restricted wind farms was really discouraging to a lot of people. Someone told me that their son had recently gotten a degree in maintaining wind turbines, and he had been looking forward to working in Wisconsin and living here, but unfortunately had had to take a job in another state that was friendlier to wind production. So obviously, we need to prioritize and decide, is this something that's important to us? And if so, we need to encourage those things. I also think we need to look at energy conservation. A lot of people talk about alternative energy, and obviously, I think it's a very good thing. But I think that if we could conserve energy, that's something that's really talked about, but that's very important. We could save a lot of money and also save a lot of energy.
Thank you, Ms. Gumpus.
There was no bill that was passed through the Wisconsin legislature this time that limited wind production, and I think one of the reasons for that was because I was very much opposed to those bills, knowing that the Michaels Corporation, located in Brownsville in the northern part of the 13th Senate seat, employs a lot of people in their wind division. But what we have seen is kind of a slowing of the development of wind farms in Wisconsin, just because it seems to be a more profitable industry when it's located out in the Dakotas or certainly in Kansas or some of the other states throughout the nation. As far as solar, Mayor Dale Opperman and I have been working with a couple of corporations to locate a solar manufacturing facility just north of the city of Jefferson. I think there are some exciting things going on in and around alternative energy in Wisconsin. The balance we have to strike, though, is with the power companies and whether or not we're going to force them to participate, because I think if that's the tack that we take, oftentimes what you'll have is a lot more resistance than if you kind of invite them in to that type of production. So I think alternative energy, and you brought up biomass as well, which is another industry that's starting to really take off in Wisconsin. I think there's a lot of excitement in and around alternative energy in Wisconsin, and I look forward to future projects.
Can I just...
Yes, you can.
I just have a question. Hopefully we can make this more of a conversation. As I understood it, there was a law passed that required such large setbacks from property boundaries that they effectively eliminated wind farms or made them impractical.
Senator?
Well, there may have been a piece of legislation proposed. My point was there's nothing that was signed into law by the governor that did any of that.
Okay. My mistake.
Jobs. We have conflicting figures coming out lately as to how many have been created and how many lost. And starting with you, Ms. Compass, what would your plan be for creating jobs? Do you think the current administration has done a good job, has created jobs? And what would you do to create jobs?
Well, I think it's obvious that... on the whole, jobs have not been created. It's a difference in philosophy. I think their philosophy is give tax breaks to entities that we hope will be job creators and the jobs will come. And I think all of us have seen that that is not working. I have based my jobs plan on real economic development principles. I've talked with planners and economic development specialists, and they tell me that they see the biggest opportunity for growth in small businesses, and oddly enough, small businesses are classified as businesses that are 500 employees or fewer, and also farm-based businesses. So I would really focus my attention on helping small businesses, and I would also, as we discussed earlier, work toward an educated workforce. I think that, as we discussed, that we need more technical training. We need more graduates from our state universities who are available and ready to work. We need incentives for job creators. That I was just reading about Act 5 that passed recently, and that provides incentives or tax breaks for job creators. I also think that we should steer loans to businesses that can create jobs in our communities.
Thank you, Ms. Compass. Senator Fitzgerald?
Well, I mentioned the WEDC. I'm very hopeful that ultimately with the elimination of the Department of Commerce and the new private public sector WEDC, which is modeled on some other states' kind of corporate structure, that, and with legislative appointments, both Democrats and Republicans there, that they ultimately will come up with the strategy that encompasses a lot of what the legislature has already embraced: the new manufacturer's tax credit, job creation tax deduction for businesses, hiring new employees, which results in a $4,000 or $2,000 tax deduction for the employer, the small business tax credit, which is for those businesses that gross under $500,000 a year. We had a business relocation tax credit for any corporation that locates 51% of their workforce here. They are now eligible. We've had the economic development tax credit, expanded small business loans under WEDA. There's a long laundry list of bills that the Wisconsin legislature, and not Republican legislature, in a very high partisan way have continued to embrace. This is modeled after North Carolina, where they have done this for some time and had great success. The other model is Texas. Get government out of the way. Get government out of the way. Less red tape, less regulation. I think what the WEDC is trying to create is something in the middle. They're trying to work towards something in the middle. You know what? Instead of jobs numbers, the other thing that I focus on as a legislator and as a former co-chair of the Finance Committee is two of the income tax collection numbers that have just come out. And in March and in April, the nonpartisan fiscal bureau, has said, listen, we look like we're on the uptick as far as income tax collections. That's not a number you can fudge. That's not political ploy. That's a real number that ultimately the legislature looks at, because as we look forward to the next budget, that is how that's going to be funded. And it's a nonpartisan number. And I'm excited about what we saw in March and April, and I hope we see the same thing in May. It means that corporations are hiring here in Wisconsin, and it's a real figure, and I think it's something that I wish the media would focus on that more and a little less on the jobs numbers bouncing back and forth.
Thank you, Senator.
Can I respond to that?
Yes, Ms. Kempis, go ahead.
I think when we hear all these numbers being thrown around, it overwhelms people, and they get confused, and they say, I give up. I'm not going to even try to understand that. And I think that is what certain people want us to say. But I would encourage the senator to just look around. I think a lot of us are hurting. Some of my best volunteers are people who are really motivated, really dedicated, but they're out of work right now. We have 200,000 people who are unemployed here, and just because the unemployment numbers are going down doesn't mean more people are getting jobs. That means a lot of people are simply giving up and dropping off the rolls.
Thank you, Ms. Kempis. Senator?
Well, I would just say that's one of the reasons we're trying to reform government in Wisconsin, because we realize there's a lot of people that have lost their job or had their hours cut from 40 hours a week to 20 hours a week. And we said, you know what? We can't continue to prop up this one sector of Wisconsinites that have not lost their job, have full benefits, both health and pension. I mean, if anybody's aware of that, I am, I think. And that's what the case is about. So if you're hearing from the same people that are really hurting out there, I can't believe that you wouldn't support Act 10 or the reforms that we put in place.
This is another example of this divide and conquer strategy. You're
Please respect the candidates.
You are turning neighbor against neighbor. I heard you on the news on Sunday night saying teachers were getting paid too much, or public employees were getting paid too much, and their neighbors were tired of paying for their health insurance. I just don't understand what kind of leader can try to turn neighbor against neighbor. That doesn't make sense to me.
Go ahead, Senator.
I'm not trying to turn neighbor against neighbor. We're trying to bring fairness. And the fairness is that the public employee unions have for too long been protected from the downturn in the economy. And that's why the people that live next door to them who are losing their home or paying for not only their own 401k, but the person living right next to them are frustrated. That discussion's been going on for many years in Wisconsin. But the idea that you're going to remind me that there's people out there that have lost their job and are hurting, I really find that tough to take.
Are we done on this one?
Well, let's keep it going.
All right, one more.
I'm not a member of a union. No one in my family is a member of a union. But I have been told my husband's not a member of a union.
Come on.
No, this is interesting. I have no vested interest in whether or not people have collective bargaining rights or not, but what I've been told out on the petition drive, what I've been told by volunteers, what I've been told out on the campaign trail, is that people have given up higher wages than they might have made in the private sector in exchange for benefits and pension. And so when you take those things away from them, you're effectively stealing from them. That is what I've been told.
Yeah, I've heard that too.
Senator?
I've heard that too. I don't buy it.
Say it again in case everyone didn't hear it.
I said I've heard that too. I don't buy it.
Thank you, sir.
Then why did you tell Brother Van Susteren
that
this
is
Barack
Obama? Sit down! Would you escort this man out, please? Sorry for the interruption. consolidating many of the thoughts and questions sent to us for this forum, people are tired of partisanship, recrimination, blame, and they're tired of recalls. Some of the things they'd like to see are, in Madison, between the parties, civility, communication, cooperation, openness, and respect. Senator, what needs to be done to make Wisconsin state government more politically functional?
I've been in the legislature, obviously, for a while. There are a number of people that served on the other side of the aisle that I have been good friends with over the years. I still have a number of Democrats that I work with on a regular basis from anything from how the Senate functions on all the way down to pieces of legislation. 96% of all the bills signed into law by Governor Walker this session are bipartisan. 96%. And I think that might be shocking to a lot of people sitting out in the audience, because the focus, oftentimes by the media, and rightfully so, because they're trying to get listeners and sell newspapers, is to focus on that small little piece that's left out there. Listen, I get along fine with John Erpenbach. I get along fine with Mark Miller. We're friendly. We talk outside of the Senate chamber. I've always said that this is something that I think has been overblown. And in this last session, sure, it's been very high profile. No one, I think, expected the state to become the tip of the spear on this discussion about unions and the taxpayers' ability to pay for the unions. But, you know, ultimately, I hope that if we can get past these recalls, and what I'm hearing on the door-to-door right now, which is not necessarily what I heard when I was helping other senators in the first round of recalls, is enough already. We're sick of paying for recalls. We're sick of watching the TV, listening to the radio, and getting the direct mail on a regular basis. Enough is enough. And I'm hopeful that after June 5th, we can move on and move into a regular legislative schedule like we've operated under for the last 100 years in the Wisconsin State Senate.
Thank you, Senator. Ms. Compass, your feelings on this?
Well, I wish we could separate the right to recall from partisanship, but I guess I would like to address the right to recall first. I want to stress that democracy doesn't stop when we cast our ballots. It's a continual process, and we need to watch our leaders and hold them accountable, and this right is protected in our Constitution. What we're seeing here is a pattern of abuse of power and betrayal of trust. The senator broke the open meetings law. He forced his fellow legislators to sign secrecy pledges. And he didn't campaign on these major policies that he has imposed on our society. He didn't tell us he wanted to divide and conquer us. Recalls are extraordinarily difficult. Many recalls have been attempted, including the recent one of Senator Jauch, but most fail because they are so difficult. So that's how I feel about the right to recall. As far as partisanship, I think, things like forcing people to sign secrecy pledges and only allowing people to see certain information if they belong to a certain party does not help the bipartisan cause. The first thing I would do when I'm sworn in as senator, I guess, is shake Senator Schultz's hand. I really want to reach across the aisle to more moderate Republicans and see how we can work together on bills.
Thank you, Ms. Compass.
Well, first of all, I didn't break the open meetings law. I know the open meetings law inside and out. On that evening, the clerk, I know and everybody knows that the Senate rules, as they've been written and passed by the entire body, say that there is zero notice that needs to be given for a conference committee. Oh, and by the way, that is probably, that conference committee that evening in the Senate parlor is probably the most watched public meeting that has ever happened in the history of the state of Wisconsin. The idea that somehow that was done in secret is absolutely ridiculous. The other thing I'd just like to say is secrecy pledges. Every bill that's ever been run through the Wisconsin legislature has a period of time in when it's in drafting. And if you're elected senator of the 13th district, I'd like to hear what your pledge is on how you're going to handle the drafting process when people are brainstorming about what they want to do with a piece of legislation. If you don't have that protection, oh, by the way, which has been afforded by the Wisconsin Supreme Court on a case that was challenged under Senator Dave Zien, and the court said, absolutely, legislators need a period of time in which they can discuss legislation before it's made public so that they cannot be hurt by the idea of having an open exchange amongst the legislators. And it's like any other proposal that you might see. You have to have a period of time in which there's a creative process and people can give and take. That is exactly what happened with everything that was part of redistricting. The idea that it was done any different than the way it was done 10 years ago by the Democrats, which is exactly the way they did it, or 20 years before that, is ridiculous. We modeled the whole redistricting process off of what had been in place before. So you can continue to say that somehow I've manipulated and forced the idea that I made, that I would force Senator Mike Ellis to sign a secrecy pledge and he wouldn't understand what he's signing. You haven't met Mike Ellis. It's ridiculous.
Can I respond to that?
Go ahead.
I actually watched the court session when Judge Sumi was deciding whether or not your actions broke the open meetings law. And I remember an aide testifying that she ran to post notice because she knew that time was limited. She knew that she needed to give 2 hours notice. She didn't quite make it. She did not make it in time. 2 hours notice was not given. The Supreme Court ruled that it was indisputable that proper notice was not given. And they said that the legislature could make up its own rules. Also, I think it's disingenuous to suggest that you always do things this way. These secrecy pledges were unheard of. I've seen them myself.
They were done 10 years before that.
You are named on attorney letterhead, and every Republican legislator was apparently forced to sign.
Yeah, and my brother, the Speaker, and I duped every Republican legislator into signing a secrecy document. You really believe that, Lori? You really believe that? Come on.
I didn't say that they were duped. I said that
they willingly did it.
I have read, and you can tell me if this is true. I have read that a legislator was welcomed into a room, shown two versions of a map, and said, this is the version of the map you'll get if you sign this pledge. This is the version that you'll get if you won't, and we'll run a Tea Party candidate against you. Is that true?
That is absolutely false and ridiculous.
I think we'll end it at that point and go to closing remarks. We'll begin with Ms. Compass.
Really? That was quick.
Thank you all for being here this evening. I think that our discussion tonight has shown that the people of our district have never had a clearer choice between the entrenched power of a career politician and the grassroots energy of a citizen candidate. We're here tonight because the senator abused his power and betrayed our trust. He campaigned on jobs and economic development, but instead of jobs, he gave us divisive policies that polarized our state. We didn't ask him to roll back women's rights, but he did. We didn't ask him to roll back voting rights, but he did. We didn't ask him to roll back workers' rights, but he did. And in doing so, he turned neighbor against neighbor, friend against friend. He led the effort to execute a plan that was, in Governor Walker's words, designed to divide and conquer us, his constituents. As upsetting as these policies were, the process he followed was even worse. He shut down debate. He silenced our voices. He had absolute power, and he used it to hurt us. And last winter, 20,000 of his own constituents told me that they could not bear this to go on. They told me it was time to stand up for what's right. They told me they didn't want him anymore. I'm honored that the volunteers turned to me to serve instead, and I'll do my best to be worthy of their trust. I will be a senator who is open and accessible. I'll return the focus of our district to create jobs, fund education, and provide affordable health care. I'll help return to Wisconsin's best traditions of cooperation and civility in the legislature. And I'll be honored to serve as your voice in the Senate. As I've said from the beginning, this campaign is not about one person, and it isn't about one political party. It's about our shared belief that people should matter more than money. It's about our belief in open, honest government. It's about our belief that legislators should represent their constituents honorably. The people I've met during this campaign, Republicans, independents, and Democrats, have shown me that there is so much more that unites us than divides us. This gives me great hope. I am offering you a clear choice. I ask for your vote on June 5th.
Quiet. Sit down, please. Sit down. Quiet. Thank you, Ms. Compass. Closing remarks, Senator Fitzgerald.
Thank you once again for putting this together this evening. I know that debates are difficult, not only because of timing, but the logistics of trying to pull it off. And in this politically charged environment, I know it was even more difficult than what it would be usually. I do believe that the legislature has some unfinished business. And I brought up those issues earlier, specifically mining and a venture capital bill that ultimately I think will be a job creator if we are able to create that community here in Wisconsin. I'm hopeful that we can tackle those issues sometime this summer prior to the November elections. But I believe that this recall, and the recall of the governor and the lieutenant governor, has got to be behind us. We need to move forward. And the way to move forward, I think, is to be able to put together what we believe would be a strong economic development plan and a job creation plan. The next generation, my family's here this evening as well, is counting on us to do that. They want to know where we're going to be in February of next year when the governor introduces his next budget. Are we going to eliminate that structural deficit? Are we going to have a balanced budget in the future? This election is about moving forward with a good fiscal package for the state of Wisconsin. Once again, thank you very much for being here this evening.
Thank you, Senator. For the benefit of those who are listening or watching this forum, it will be readily available for rebroadcast in a number of venues, including WFAW and the Daily Union websites, and Jefferson cable channels, who are going to make it available to community channels throughout the district. WFAW and our fellow sponsors, the Daily Jefferson County Union and the Jefferson and Fort Atkinson Chambers of Commerce, want to give special thanks to Dr. Michael Swartz and the Jefferson School District for making this auditorium available for us this evening with great disruption to them. Yes, on that point you may applaud. And I want to add on very short notice. And especially thank you, Senator Fitzgerald, Ms. Compass, for your participation. I think you both very clearly stated your positions, and you have given voters in the 13th District a clear choice on June 5th. that, and that concludes our forum.